Hello and welcome to Skipton Talks with Mortgage Strategy. I'm Kimberly Dondo, and in today's episode, we will be discussing three critical areas of home ownership and mortgage lending. Today, I'm joined by Lucy Lewis, National Accounts Lead at Skipton, and Robert Sinclair, Chief Executive at AMI. Thank you for joining me today. So I'm sure that our audience probably knows you guys, but could you give us a bit of an intro into yourselves and how you got started in the industry, Robert?
Okay. I suppose I've been around a long time now. I really started in the world of banking, initially with Middlebank, which became HSBC, then went to Abbey, which became Santander, and did a lot of different roles in banking, but then jumped out of that and joined what was the Association of Independent Financial Advisors, looking after the second charge market back in 2006. But then when the financial crisis happened in 2008, I took over the Association of Mortgage Intermediaries portfolio as well, and have been running that since then, and took it independent in 2012. And so I've been really looking after how we deal with regulators and government on behalf of the mortgage broker side of the market ever since 2008. And I've been trying to fight the good fight to keep the voice of the broker in front of those who matter.
And that is an important fight. Thank you. Lucy?
So like so many other people who work in this lovely industry, I fell into it.
Yeah.
Left university, had 10 weeks before I went and worked at Disneyland in Paris, and I needed a temp job.
That's amazing.
So I applied at a local temp agency and ended up working at Countrywide. I did that for 10 weeks, went off to Disney, came back to visit people there, and they offered me a job in their marketing department. And that's really how my career in financial services started. Did a number of roles there, and then I fell pregnant. So I took 9 years off work, which is a little unusual, I know, but I did. And then after 9 years, needed a part-time job, and looked, and surprisingly, I suppose, came across a job as an administrator at AMI. So I went and worked at AMI, started off as their administrator there, changed roles kind of 2.5 years in, became full-time as a senior policy advisor, stayed there for 2.5 years, went on to Legal and General Mortgage Club, working with lenders, and now I'm at Skipton Building Society. So
awesome. What an amazing story, starting off with Disneyland. I don't know if I'd ever have left. I think I want to get started by talking a little bit about innovation. It seems to be something that a lot of people are talking about in this industry in particular. So Lucy, I wanted to know more about how lender innovation is impacting and assisting first-time buyers, because that's a group that really seems to be struggling.
Yeah, and it's a really important group to us at Skipton Building Society. We're a mutual as a building society, so owned by our members. And one of our founding principles, one of the reasons we were founded, was to help people into homes. And obviously, first-time buyers are an incredibly important part of the housing market. If you don't have first-time buyers buying those first homes, then the second steppers have no one to sell their properties to and to take that next step on the housing market. So it's really important that we keep the first-time buyers coming into the market. And I think, you know, that's beholden on all lenders to do what they can to help people. It's a really difficult time to be a first-time buyer at the moment. So they have numerous challenges. We've got the cost of living challenge that I think we've all been feeling. That doesn't matter your means. I think we've all noticed a difference. We've got the impact of rising interest rates. Obviously, that also impacts affordability, because lenders work a stress rate into their affordability calculation. So we're impacted that way. First-time buyers are struggling partly because of the cost of living, partly because of the cost of renting to raise a deposit. We did some research at Skipton at the start of this year, and it showed that on average in the country, takes 7.9 years to save for a deposit. And in London, it's 12.8 years,
which is
a really, really long time, obviously. And that is an incredible challenge. So you've got some people who are lucky enough to have family members or other people who are able to help contribute to their mortgage. I think Bank of Mum and Dad is now the ninth biggest lender, which you know, really shows something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But, and you've got other people who aren't in a position where they've got family members who are able to help them. So what do they do? How do they get that foot on a property ladder? And, mm-hmm. you know, you've got people obviously want to get a foot on a property ladder. They want to buy a property mm-hmm. because that's an aspirational thing to do. Mm-hmm. But I think that helps to shape your life.
Yeah.
And it's very different between the people who have to stay in rented for the whole of their lives and the people who are actually able to buy a property. They sit down roots. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper in the long run because you're not just paying into rent. So that there's lots of different kind of, I mean, I could go on for a long time about how important first time buyers are.
Yeah. And I know that Skipton has been trying to address that with some of their own innovative products, one of which was the Track Record Mortgage, which we talked about earlier this year. So are you expanding upon that?
Yes. So Track Record has gone really well. We're incredibly pleased with it. We're really pleased with the reaction and really pleased with how brokers perceived it and also how their customers perceived it. And we heard from brokers, it was so lovely to have a good news story as well in the market because, you know, there was lots in the press about it and customers were actually going in and going to see mortgage advisors and saying, you know, I've heard about this, I'd like to do something. And even if they weren't able to go to get a mortgage with Track Record, often there were other ways of them being able to get a mortgage. So actually, just by us launching Track Record, more people found a home than just the people who went on the Track Record product. But we've been really pleased with how it's gone. I mean, obviously, it's high loan to value lending. It's not for everybody. What we have done, so we listened to the feedback that we had. So when it first came out, it was just for first-time buyers only, and both parties had to be first-time buyers. But the feedback was very much that, you know, sometimes you get a first-time buyer and buying with somebody who's not a first-time buyer, or sometimes life events happen and that puts you back in rented, having bought a property previously. Maybe somebody inherited it from their parents. Maybe they had a divorce and they've been in rented for a long time. So what we've since done is we've opened it up so it's not now just for first-time buyers. It's for anybody who's been renting for the past 3 years, so who's not owned a property within the last 3 years. So that's opened it up.
Well, that's great, because I know a lot of people who fall into those categories as well. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think it's good to having seen Skipton be innovative in that way as a mutual, where they're prepared to step out because they've got manual underwriting and are prepared to look at things in a bit more specialised way. And I even look at some of the stuff they've done recently around higher fee, lower interest rate. A lot of people don't like that, but I think it's good to see people trying to push the boundaries and think about things in a different way to help people look at the market differently. And it's really important that we do that in a market where people are struggling and think that they perhaps can't be helped. And if we create more and more products that are just different, it allows a conversation to happen. And as Lucy said before, we'll get more people across the threshold.
I think, it is very important to keep that innovation going and figure out what works, because you never know unless you try. Robert, I wanted to ask you a bit about green initiatives within the mortgage industry, and what work and what initiatives are being done to kind of promote them and have more people aware.
So Amy started this journey a long time ago, really, in terms of trying to think about how we engage in the green agenda. So the Green Finance Initiative, which is effectively government-supported body, we've been working with them and a range of other stakeholders, and created and we've kind of helped the Mortgage Climate Action Group, who were created amongst a group of brokers and lenders to try to generate partnerships and collaboration, thought collaboration in the industry. And we've been really close to trying to grow that. And we've now produced a website called Green Mortgage Advice that allows people to look at the kind of things that are going on, whether that's in the area of what is possible in the world of retrofit, and also making people more aware of what builders are doing in relation to new build to help people understand the art of the possible. But then also trying to get lenders and brokers to think about their role in the journey. And that a broker really in this modern world can't ignore this, because if I think about whether the government have taken away targets or not doesn't really matter. We've got this trajectory that says by 2035 and 2050, we need to change the landscape from where it is now. And therefore, I don't see things going away, because what the government has actually done, instead of setting the boundaries in the landscape themselves, they've actually issued letters to the PRA and the FCA giving them accountability for the journey.
Right.
And what we're going to see as we go into 2024, I believe, is the PRA and the FCA begin to set out to lenders what they think the requirements are going to be for them to help or accelerate the level of activity that's going on in this marketplace. And I think, you know, Rishi's pushed us back from a precipice because I think he recognised that he felt that the industry wasn't ready, not just the mortgage industry, but also the retrofit industry isn't in a place yet to have the capacity mm-hmm. for the type of demand that could be generated. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's giving us a bit more breathing space to think about how do we get the right technology, the correctly trained people, mm-hmm. and the correctly trained people in the financial world to help support consumers understand the art of the possible and also the right funding models are for that. Mm-hmm. So we've got a bit longer to get in the right place, but that shouldn't stop us still wanting to be really, really hard working and active on this.
Right.
So there's a lender handbook that sits as part of the work that was done jointly between the industry and the Green Finance Initiative. There's now a broker handbook that sits as part of that, which are really good educational tools to allow everybody in the industry to understand a common language, a common structure, and a common architecture of what can be done to get us forwards. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I'm passionate about this is that fundamentally, as we move through a cycle of properties being traded or bought, or people decide that they want to worry about their energy costs as part of the cost of living crisis. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that whoever talks to them has knowledge. Now, the main two people they will interact with will either be estate agents or mm-hmm. mortgage brokers. Mm-hmm. I don't think the average 21-year-old estate agent is going to have a credible conversation about retrofit.
Right.
We are dependent on mortgage brokers who have more understanding, more credibility, more professionalism to be educated to have those conversations with customers mm-hmm. about the possibility of retrofit and the way of funding it. Mm-hmm. So that's the real passionate drive for me about if brokers are not educated in this, the lenders will go and find another way of doing it because they're going to get pressurized to mm-hmm. change the way that their lending, their book, their back book mm-hmm. looks and what their forward book looks like. And whilst EPCs are not perfect, they're mm-hmm. the only measure we've got at the moment.
Yeah.
And until we get to different measures, which may come as we get into the 2030s, but certainly in the 2020s, we're going to be in this place of using EPCs as a proxy for energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we've got to work through what works best in order to deliver that.
Right.
That's a very long answer.
I mean, it was very in-depth and detailed, and I love that. But I also wondered what other effects green initiatives could have for advisors and brokers and their clients, and what opportunities are there as well?
What we haven't seen yet is the kind of mortgage product that I think I expect to see going forward. So the 10 bips off for an EPC C or better is not a green mortgage. Mm-hmm. Green mortgages are where helping to fund the transaction of greening, improving the property more fundamentally.
Right.
And we've got to think about, and we've seen some initiatives where people are saying, look, we'll give lower interest rates for doing certain types of activity or cash back it linked to certain things. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important that we begin to see people testing the water as to see what works best in this market mm-hmm. to engage consumers to want to play. So in the same way we were talking about before innovation, we need to see lots of different lenders trying different things mm-hmm. in order to see what gets traction. So I'm hoping as we go into 2024, as we've come out of this really difficult period post the trust regime, we've got time to think about innovation because that the whole trust thing and the whole mortgage charter thing slowed everything down in terms of innovation. So we've got to get back into thinking about what it is we're really here to do to innovate and be better mm-hmm. as a sector to support my grandchildren having a planet that they can still live on.
And that is the most important thing to think about ultimately. Yeah. We still need this planet. But Lucy, I wanted to kind of delve into mentoring. We were talking about it off camera and the importance of it. It has highly impacted me. But I wanted to know about your experience with the mentoring schemes you've been involved in and why it's so important within this industry to kind of promote that diversity and inclusion as well.
I think in answering this, I should probably take it back to the research we did when I was still at AMI, the Amy Viewpoint research on diversity and inclusion and equity in the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the first work to our knowledge that anybody had done in this area. And we'd all kind of sat around at the Amy board and thought, you know, there was potentially problems. It was very much, even the board was very much white, male. Mm. The industry was very male dominated and very white and not reflective of the population of the UK.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important as financial services, where we're helping people. You know, we need to be able to put ourselves in the mindset of our customers and to be able to understand our customer situations. And we've not been in a place where we've been able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were looking at what we were going to do for the viewpoint and how we were going to do it, we realized actually we had no markers in the industry. So we didn't have a benchmark of where we were. So we knew that we were starting with the research project to really understand what was going on. And I think that was incredibly interesting, shocking at times.
Mm-hmm.
Quite emotional to be involved in, I think it's probably fair to say. But one of the things that came out really clearly is kind of how people feel. And our industry is made up of really, really big firms and mm-hmm. really, really small firms. And we found that some people who'd had problems in potentially bigger firms, what they had done is they'd wanted to stay in the industry. They loved working in mortgages. They loved mm-hmm. dealing with customers and mm-hmm. all the work they did. So they set up on their own as sole traders or really small firms.
Right.
And they existed then in their own bubble. And we were, one of the things we wanted to do was to be able to help people to kind of break down barriers and ceilings. And mm-hmm. just, you know, we had a group of people probably who were suddenly more aware than they had ever been of the issues that other people were facing. So,
right.
you know, we had a really supportive board. Mm-hmm. Yes, lots of them were white and male.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, lots of them hadn't realized the issues that some other people were facing, but they really wanted to be able to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that seemed very important was to be able to set something up so that people would be able to talk to each other and learn from each other's experiences and mm-hmm. also to help open doors for each other. And I think what we were talking about earlier is sometimes opening doors for somebody can be introducing somebody to somebody, you know, at an event. If you see your mentee there, introducing them to somebody, just making them feel more comfortable. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be any more grandiose than that.
Yeah.
You can do all kinds of things with mentoring. It can help you through difficult times. What it really is having somebody who's not involved in your situation to kind of take a step back,
mm-hmm.
listen to you, and mm-hmm. almost help you compartmentalize things and therefore to deal with things, to maybe suggest other things that you could consider
mm-hmm.
and take things forward.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about mentoring as well is often people think about it and you think of kind of an older mentor mentoring somebody who's younger, but it doesn't have to be that way.
No.
And I know lots of people have also been interested in reverse mentoring. So actually really understanding the situations of other people and really seeing then how they can help, and the people who are kind of more at the top of the industry, understanding what they can do and the challenges people are facing.
Yeah.
And, you know, how is there anything they can do to help make changes in the industry and use their kind of positions of power, I suppose, to make a difference?
Yeah.
And that's why we needed the mentoring website. We've been really fortunate in the fact that we have a sponsor for it.
Mm-hmm.
So mentors and mentees can sign up absolutely free of charge.
Okay.
You can do it virtually. So mm-hmm. you don't have to be in the same place as somebody. You don't mm-hmm. have to meet them face to face, but you absolutely can arrange to meet them face to face if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's once that connection has started, then it's within your gift to use it as you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're incredibly lucky to have done that. And listening to some of the people that have signed up to be mentors, there's all kinds of experience. You know, there's a wealth of experience. There's people who've got qualifications in business coaching as well as, you know, experience of mentoring. So I think it's a brilliant thing, and I really hope that people use it and take advantage of it.
I think you should. I've used mentors and they've been a wealth of knowledge, but also helping me with that introduction piece of going to an event when you're an absolute newbie. You're terrified of being in this room of people. But if you have someone there who knows some of the people there, they can introduce you. And from there, you piggyback and you keep going. And then you can pay it forward and do that with someone later on in life. So yeah, I think it's beneficial to both parties. Yeah. So I don't see.
And it doesn't stop. I mean, even I walk into rooms, having done the job as long as I have, and mm-hmm. look around and think, oh, this is scary.
Yeah.
because sometimes it's a group of people that I don't know, or mm-hmm. it's something really different. And And actually, I'm taking this back. I mean, the reason, Lucy is absolutely right. The work that she did initially on all of this project was fundamental to where we've got to now. Mm-hmm. The work that has followed on, the bit for me that is fascinating is that we've now got a group of, I don't know, about 80 really energetic people who are committed to trying to engineer change mm-hmm. in a constructive way for our industry to make it a more diverse and equitable place to work. And that's really important. The mentoring piece, I mean, and I'm mentoring somebody at the moment, mm-hmm. and I'm finding it really, and this is what people need to understand, is the mentee is getting something out of it.
Yeah.
I'm getting something out of it as well.
Yeah.
Because it's making me stop and reflect in the questions that get asked, the discussions we have about all sorts of stuff that I might have preconceived ideas about or things that are in the back of my head that I just instinctively think. But going through the conversations make me think a lot more consciously as opposed to not thinking consciously. Mm-hmm. And that's a real help when you reach my age and experience where you just assume you always know everything.
Yeah.
And you don't, because the world around you is continually changing and rebasing, and therefore you have to rebase with it. Otherwise you end up in a difficult place. But the real key for me about this is that, the thing that is annoying me at the moment is some firms are being quite negative about this by saying that they feel that they don't want people to come into this open mentoring scheme. They want to keep them in their closed mentoring schemes within their own firms.
Okay.
Because they're scared that the person will let secrets about the company out.
Or they'll find out this is not the way that it should be or something like
perhaps.
That.
And so I think firms should be much braver about trusting their people.
Yeah.
Not to actually know what they can and can't say and what they can and can't do. They should trust the mentor to respect any confidentiality that sits in that mentor's mentee relationship, because it is a confidential process. Mm-hmm. And they should also understand that actually very few of us have any state secrets. Particularly in the world of mortgages. You might think you've got something that's absolutely new and different.
Yeah.
Trust me, it's been there before.
Yeah. That's so true. It's just, I don't think there's anything wrong with like trying to build and share and build a community that's cohesive. There's no competition within it. I think it's only positive for evolving as an industry. But I wanted to know if both of you have any success stories off the back of the like mentoring or, you know, this promotion of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Do you want me to go?
I would speak about events.
Go on, yeah, go speak about that. You go.
I go first.
Yeah, go for it.
I'll let you finish up. So, I guess one of the things that came out quite strongly from our research actually was difficulties at events. Mm-hmm. Particularly because there's often alcohol involved and that sometimes changes people's behaviour.
Yeah.
And it was one of the first things we saw was that at start of events, so I think they did it at the L&G Awards, then they did it at the Amy Dinner, and now pretty much every single event I go to, people are reminded that it's an inclusive environment, it's a work environment, people need to
respect each other.
Absolutely, respect each other, behave in a way befitting to a work environment.
Yeah. And I think we had that at our awards as well.
And it's incredibly important.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that people had perhaps forgotten it. But I think just by saying it at the front, it just makes it feel a little bit better. And we have heard, you still hear stories about events and things happening. Mm-hmm. But I think now people are quicker to jump in and say, no, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And table hosts are now, if necessarily, and hopefully it's not necessarily obviously but if necessary, they are standing up and saying, no,
you need to stop.
Yeah, you can't behave like that.
Yeah.
I think the difference is that if I go back and look at where we were when we did that analysis, we had 15, 20 years of pent up anger about the way people had been treated. And so we almost lanced that boil or let it out. And it was quite an outpouring of emotion, which, as Lucy mentioned earlier, was quite emotional for some of us in terms of having to listen to it.
Yeah.
I think what we now have is a much more open and collaborative and supportive environment where people feel more able to speak up at the time.
Yeah.
And it will be dealt with at the time in a better way. And I hope that people will do that because the hardest part is to try to deal with it later. And dealing with it in the moment is a much easier thing to do. It's harder on one level because you need to have somebody who's got the confidence to actually deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's in that way, it's hard, but it's easier then if it's dealt with in that moment and it's dealt with quickly and surgically and the person. Because I actually think quite often some of the people do this without actually understanding at all what they've done.
Yeah.
And some are conscious, but it's also some is just learned behavior.
Yeah.
I talk about it sometimes in that, you know, I grew up in Scotland and I'm a avid Rangers supporter, which means I hate Celtic.
Yeah.
And I use those words not advisedly. I hate Celtic. And I can remember my son once said to me, I'm going to get that green and white football. He said, Celtic. I went, I'll burn it on your back. And it was out my mouth before I could stop it.
Yeah.
Because the emotional trigger,
the response from childhood,
is that. And I would never do that, of course, to my son. Yeah. It's entirely irrational. But the learned behaviour of years is something you have to unpick. And you know, I know I'm not racist, but it doesn't mean my language sometimes doesn't bring all the unconscious bias that sits in me.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff has to be managed and dealt with in an environment where we have to trust each other a lot more.
Yeah.
And work together to get it right. And all the work that we've done, and Lucy's been a very strong part of staying in our steering group and making sure that we stick true to the principles we started with, is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really critical for us.
Yeah. No, those are very important things because I think, yeah, sometimes you have those biases and you're not even aware of it just because of your background or just not being around certain groups of people. It's just something that people have to unlearn, but it's something that needs to be addressed and there needs to be safe spaces to have those conversations, which I'm so glad that you both started this. So, yeah. But I think that's a wrap for us today. I really enjoyed talking to you both, Lucy, Robert. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us in today's episode of Skipton Talks with Mortgage Strategy. We do hope that you enjoyed it. For more valuable insights, please do visit Skipton Talks Hub. And for mortgage news, please visit Mortgage Strategy. See you next time.